I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Gut Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
Although I went through a tough time, it showed me how someone could still love me at my lowest and at my weakest, because the love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
So deep down, we all know what we want in life. We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season of the Good Glow podcast is brought to you with thanks to Ireland's leading pharmacy chain, Lloyds Pharmacy. We're getting some sun and it's so important to keep our skin protected. Luckily, Lloyds Pharmacy's highly trained skin experts can provide the best SPF advice and tailored recommendations to suit you and your family. Visit lloydspharmacy.ie for all your sun care and skincare needs. Lloyds Pharmacy, say hello to the people that know. I am so excited to bring this episode of the Good Glow podcast to you today with Anna Lee Dowling. So I first came across Anna Lee on Twitter a couple of months ago after she tweeted that she was found at a train station in China when she was a little baby and was adopted by Irish parents. So her tweet went viral all over the world. It was liked over 80,000 times and everybody wanted to know more about Anna Lee. So today she's on my podcast to tell her story about her start in life, about her parents and how much she grew up in such a loving home and how she really believes that she is where she's meant to be. Anna Lee is 19. She's so bright and beautiful and has so much to say. And today we talk about her start in life and how she feels about it. And she speaks about returning to that train station where she was found in 2018. All the emotions that brought up and, you know, wondering about her birth parents. She speaks so beautifully about her story and I'm so excited to bring this episode to you today. So I hope you enjoy it. If you do, please leave me a review. And if you want to check out more about our online wellness course here at The Good Glow, it's based around my pillars of self-care, joy, habits, nourishment, nature, and self-worth. Our lectures are available as audio files, so you can listen to our course while you're out for a walk or doing the garden or just chilling out and you don't want to stare at a laptop anymore. They are available as audio files. So for more, you can head over to thegoodglow.ie. Now, over to Anna Lee. Anna Lee Dowling, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thanks for having me, Georgie.
We've been in touch over the last couple of months. I know that you've been doing exams and things like that. So I am thrilled to finally sit down with you today and hear your story. So thanks so much for coming to Dublin and sitting down with me today.
Thank you.
How did your exams go, by the way?
They went really well. I'm actually, as of recording, I'm getting my results out this Friday, but I think they went very well.
Oh, that's so good. So we're going to start. I'm going to tell people about this tweet that connected with so many people. And who knew that you could tell such a story in such a few amount of words? So somebody tweeted, "Tell me a decision that changed the trajectory of your life, but you can't say choosing your faith, getting married or having a kid." You quote tweeted that and you said, "Someone found me in a train station in China, so instead of dying, I ended up in Ireland." How many times was that retweeted or liked?
When I was looking at the stats of the tweet, it was viewed over 10 million times. And I think I had something like 80,000 likes, hundreds of retweets and quote tweets. It was very bizarre.
because I just finished my first year of college. And as you know, from the pandemic, college has been online this year. So originally, I was never on Twitter as a teenager, and I only got Twitter to make friends, college friends. And as you know yourself, Twitter is very much people joking around. You only have 120 characters, few words. It's very quick, witty. And I really wasn't expecting it to blow up when everyone that I had on that was just friends. I wasn't expecting it to get the kind of exposure that it did and to reach all around the world, really.
Wow. When I saw it, I was frozen almost after reading it. When you were writing out those words in that tweet, did you think twice about it? Was it just a kind of spur of the moment thing? What was that moment like?
Not at all. Honestly, I was just kind of messing, really. Even the kind of tone of the tweet is a bit sarcastic, perhaps, and a bit lighthearted. I really wasn't thinking about it. Like, my audience on Twitter at that time was really just people my own age and friends, people from my hometown, people that I met in college. Nobody like yourself was following me at the time.
It was a beautiful tweet, and it was nice to see the support you got. And, you know, I was reading kind of the tweets you were sending afterwards. You're such a grounded person, a beautiful girl.
Thank you.
I love that you said, you know, I was left there to be found, and you really wanted people to know that. And we're going to get into all of that, and I'm excited to hear your story. Did you feel supported when you sent that out? Did you feel embraced by people?
Yes, there was an awful lot of love on Twitter. And what I found really lovely was it reached a lot of Irish people living abroad. And even though it's different circumstances for them, the idea of what home is, where your roots are, feeling connected to a place, and how that can mean, and also family as well, the word family, how that can mean so many different things for so many different people, which I thought was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear about your lovely mum and dad and everything they've done for you. First of all, tell us about the city you were born in and where you were found.
So I'm from a city called Changsha. It's in south central China. Absolutely beautiful city. In Chinese terms, it would be considered a town, very small, but there's actually over 8 million people living there.
Wow.
And it's known for its cuisine. When I was growing up, I discovered that I really liked spicy foods.
Okay.
And I'm sure I'll tell you all about my trip to China in a little bit. But when we were there, even Chinese people who are used to spicy food, everyone says like Changsha food is incredibly spicy. They just can't stop. Even if you order something that isn't, say, spicy, if it's just, I don't know, chicken noodles and it doesn't say spice in it, it will be spicy when it comes out.
Mm. So that's in your DNA. You were born to love that sort of food.
And the train station where I was found, it's a very busy train station. There's actually a chili kind of decoration on top of it outside. So I was found in the busiest train station in Hunan province. Kind of like Leinster. I think it's like 40,000 square feet. There's hundreds, thousands, possibly millions of people go through it every day. It's probably just as big as Dublin Airport.
Because I looked it up myself last night and I was reading about your city and stunning architecture and beautiful buildings. And actually, I watched a video of the train station and I didn't expect the noise, you know, when I was heard about your story and I listened to your interviews before, I couldn't quite picture what the train station was like. That's why I looked it up yesterday. But it's so loud there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there's so many people.
So many people, so many trains. And when I was actually in China, we got to go on one of those bullet trains is what they're called. And they're super fast. And when you're actually on the train itself, there's not a sound.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So very important point. You were left there to be found. Of course, you've said before, if whoever left you there didn't want you to be found, they wouldn't have left you in the busiest train station in the province.
So exactly. Yeah.
Tell us about you. Have you always known this story?
I have. But I think as a child, I didn't really fully understand what that meant. It's kind of as if your mother told you, yeah, I came home with you from the hospital. It's kind of like, yeah, OK, I get that. It's nothing too crazy.
And as you got older, did you speak to your parents about what decision they made together? Did they decide, OK, we'll always just tell the truth about where Anna Lee came from.
I'm very lucky to have such loving parents. I'm very close to my family, my parents, and I have an older brother who is their biological son. And they have always been honest and upfront about it and honest of their love for me and how much they cared for me. And I think it's beautiful, the relationship that we have. And they've always told me how much they loved me and how proud they are of me. And even their journey from before I was born up until that point that I was adopted is very beautiful and empowering.
Mm. So they decided that they wanted to adopt a baby. And what was that process like for them to get to that point? I imagine it's a difficult journey.
Adoption in any form is a very long process. There's an awful lot of paperwork and screening and things like that. For me, I was adopted through an organisation called International Orphan Aid Ireland, who have helped hundreds of children in China and elsewhere. And I was brought over to Ireland on a medical programme. So when I was left in the train station, I have a hemangioma on my leg, which is, it's a birthmark, and it's due to extra blood vessels. And it was very badly infected. And at one point when I was first initially brought over to Ireland in Crumlin Hospital, they thought that it might have been cancerous. So it was quite serious. So I was brought over with around 12 other Chinese children who all needed medical attention. And that's why we were brought here, to receive that medical attention in Ireland that we probably wouldn't have received in China. Mm. The orphanage that I was in Changsha was very short-staffed, underfunded, a lot of children that needed help there. And I wasn't there for long. I was only in the orphanage for a month or two and then came to Ireland.
And have you been told, or do you know anything about the day you were found, like who found you or what happened to you when you were found?
I have zero information, not a note. Ray Darcy asked me what was I left in, and I said I had no idea. I still don't know. Or who found me. It was probably the police in China. There was a kind of a police station near the railway station. And the orphanage that I was in for those short few months is no longer there either. It's turned into a nursing home. So I have no records of where I came from, but I just know that I was found there.
Yeah. And when you speak about you were in the orphanage, how many weeks did you say you were there for?
About 6 weeks, a month or two.
Right. And then you were brought straight to Ireland.
Yes. So I was only a few months old, they estimated, when I came to Ireland.
So when you arrived in Ireland, were you brought straight then to Crumlin Hospital?
I was, yeah. I stayed for a while in Crumlin and I was treated for burn injuries at the time. And luckily enough, I'm still here today. It wasn't too serious. I'm very grateful for the care and attention and support that I received while I was at Crumlin. And I, particularly as a child in the first few years of my life, I would go back regularly for checkups. But as I grew older, my leg never affected me.
So your mum and dad, they brought you home, their new little baby. And how old was your brother at the time?
He was 9 or 10 at the time. And he always told me this. His only condition about them adopting me was that he got to be the older brother still.
Oh, God. So, yeah, because that's a big gap, isn't it? There's an 11-year gap between myself and my brother, Sam. But what I love about it is that I remember every second of his arrival into the world, of, you know, when he was a little tiny baby. So I imagine your whole family were so excited to get you and see you and hold you.
Definitely. And they've always told me that. I've always been close with my brother, and I'm not sure if you could relate to this, but I was making my first communion when he was moving out to college. So there was a very big gap, but it's only in kind of recent years that we've gotten super close again, now that we've got more in common, I suppose. Both of us are adults now, we're both working.
Yeah, it's a beautiful relationship to have. And what was your childhood like?
When I think of my childhood, well, first of all, I still sometimes think of myself as a child. I'm still a teenager, technically, not 20 yet. But when I think of my childhood, I always think of the beach. We have a lovely mobile home in Blackwater in Wexford. And we'd spend every weekend, every summer down by the beach. So when I think of my childhood, I think of sand and the sun and swimming and going for nice walks through the forest. And I used to have a little Yorkshire Terrier who used to love the sand, kicking the sand everywhere, and he'd roll around and lie down with us when we were sunning ourselves.
I get the impression from you that you are so loved. You know, you come from a place of love. So did you always just feel so loved by your parents?
Yes, and I know I'm so lucky to have that relationship with my parents and to have such a lovely family.
How did your mum and dad feel about the tweet?
I had to explain to them what it meant to go viral and how Twitter worked first. And my mom was kind of like, do you know these people? Do I know them? And I was like, no, ma'am, no, these are strangers on the internet. Why are you talking to strangers on the internet?
And when you were growing up, did you have an interest in where you had come from?
Honestly, no. I always knew that I was adopted. I always knew I was Chinese, but I never kind of thought too deeply about it. Up until I was about 16, I think I was old enough then to fully comprehend what it meant. And it was around that time that I started listening to K-pop. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that genre. It's Korean music, not Chinese, but still Southeast Asian. And I started thinking about what it meant to be Chinese, and I really started looking at Chinese programs, Chinese music. I started loving Chinese fashion. It's a bit different to Ireland.
And in what way?
Well, in 2018, I went back to China and I went to three different cities. So Beijing, it kind of felt like being in Dublin. It's very multicultural. I mean, there was a KFC around the corner. I also went to Shanghai. Shanghai is gorgeous, so elegant. Everyone's wearing loose, flowy dresses and skirts and very pale colours, so elegant. And then the town where I'm from, Changsha, I thought was kind of edgy, chains, kind of cargo boots, cargo pants. Very different.
Isn't that great though that you had the internet growing up, that you could access that? And it's obviously, you know, it's in your DNA, Chinese culture. So you could research and get to know about where you were from.
And even the language as well. I began teaching myself Chinese when I was 16, when I was in transition year. And I got an amazing opportunity to go on work experience in the Confucius Institute at UCD. Under Ching Feng, and she taught me, and I was there for a week. And I remember on the Tuesday, she brought me back to her house to make dumplings, and it was my first time trying dumplings, and it was absolutely amazing. And I remember asking her for the recipe, and she was growing like herbs and stuff on her little balcony. And some of the things, there's no word for them in English. So I've never tasted dumplings as good as her dumplings. Oh, and I started making them myself, but still not a patch on what she had made.
And how did you find the language?
A lot of people view Chinese as the most difficult language. Well, I should preface by saying there's different types of Chinese, but the written Chinese stays the same because it's written. I'd be learning Mandarin. And it is quite difficult in some ways. I'm not sure if you know there's four different tones. But when you think about it in English, the way you say something can have a different meaning, whether, you know, you shout it or you whisper it, or the tone of your voice can, and your body language can play a lot in how something is communicated. But the actual grammar of Mandarin is quite simple. So there's no tenses and there's no conjugation. So if I was to say, you know, that I'm sitting with Georgie Crawford here, it's just I sit Georgie. There's no I was sitting with her. It was today. It doesn't matter if it's me or you or he or she that did the action. It remains the same. So once you kind of get over the basics, you're flying it.
Well, and so do you speak it well now?
I've kind of lost touch with it, to be honest, because I've been studying very hard for my law exams. But over the summer now, I'm hoping to pick it up again.
So let's talk about the first time you revisited China. How old were you then?
I was around 4 years old. And it was a bit of a family holiday. I don't remember much of it because I was so young.
Yeah. Did your parents decide to bring you there when you were four?
That was to finalize the adoption process. So I was fostered first for a while. It is an extremely long process. It can take years from start to finish. And you also have to be selected as well to be to adopt a child. So it can take years. So I was around four. We went back and to finalize the process over there. And we have some fabulous photos at home, but unfortunately, I don't remember any of it.
Yeah, it's good that you have the photos to look back on. And then 2018 was the big trip for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. So in 2018, I was 16, 17, so a lot older, able to remember the trip. From our first trip, actually, there's a photo of the four of us all wearing our leash jerseys on the Great Wall. So when we went back in 2018, I said, I have to bring a Leash jersey with me and get a photo of that and have them side by side. I have it up on my Instagram, actually. Yeah, the trip in 2018 was amazing. It was just myself and my parents that went this time. Very different to our other family holidays to, you know, Spain, Turkey. It's very different. It's halfway across the world. I remember the flight thinking that it would take forever, but then when it actually happened, I was sleeping for most of it.
I'll get straight back to my conversation with Anna Lee, but first I wanted to thank Lloyd's Pharmacy for supporting the Good Glow. Do you struggle to perfect your skincare routine? Find it hard to choose the best products to suit your skin? Well, you don't need to. Lloyd's Pharmacy offer one-to-one private consultations with their highly trained skin consultants who can advise the best routine and products to suit your skincare needs. Pop in and ask today. Many of their pharmacies are open late and on weekends. For a full list of services and the latest mega deals, head over to lloydspharmacy.ie. Now, back to Anna Lee.
How did you come to the decision that in 2018 you wanted to go to China?
All three of us wanted to go, and particularly at that point in my life, I felt like I was ready to go back.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I went back when I was any younger, I might not have appreciated it as much as I did or understood the gravity of it. My parents have always told me that we would go back at some stage, and that point just felt like the right time to go.
Yeah, they sound like incredible parents.
They are amazing. They're, not to be cheesy, but the best parents in the world.
It was meant to be. You were meant to be with them.
And I'm a strong believer in that. And kind of what I said in the tweet there as well, that things work out the way that they're meant to. And I truly believe that this is where I'm supposed to be.
What sort of, you said you slept for most of the time on the flight, but was it, would you have felt a little bit nervous?
I was. On our flight going over, there was a lot of other Chinese people there. And I remember the air staff, and this happened an awful lot when I was in China. A lot of people would assume, because it's very common for Europeans or Westerners to come to China and they'd hire a translator. So a lot of people thought that I was my parents' translator because I looked Chinese. And at this point, when I was that age, I had very little Chinese. And I'd be telling people in Mandarin, no, I can't speak Chinese. And they'd say, but you're speaking it right now. And I'm kind of like, I know, but.
Wow. Where did you fly into?
We flew into Shanghai first, and I fell in love with the city. It's kind of known as a fashion capital. Completely, words can't describe that trip. It was amazing. Shanghai was so beautiful. I've already told you about the fashion. The food was amazing. They mainly eat noodles, and I love noodles. And even the weather, so warm compared to Ireland, and the cities and the kind of tourist attractions that we went to. Like, I think that's one of the first things I noticed when I was in China, actually, how tall all the buildings are.
Mm.
And when we came home back to Ireland and Dublin, and I always thought from being from the Midlands, like Dublin's so big, and then coming home from China, like, oh my God, all the buildings are so short.
Yeah. I have a friend actually that lived in Shanghai, and he speaks so fondly of his time there. And I've never been myself. But yeah, like that, I think I imagine that if I went to China, I'd just be almost just looking up, you know.
It's simply breathtaking, yeah.
Is it? So what did you spend your days doing while you were in Shanghai? Just touristy things?
Yeah, sightseeing. It wasn't really the type of trip where we'd lie around the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And just really, because we only spent a week in each city, so it wasn't an awful lot of time. I really wanted to kind of soak it up. And of course, as well, a trip to China, it's quite expensive. It's a long trip. If you're going to go, it's going to be for a couple of weeks. So I knew that when I was going, it would probably be at least a few years before I went back.
So after Shanghai, where did you go then?
We went to Changsha then, which is where I'm from. And as you can probably imagine, that was quite overwhelming and quite emotional. Shanghai was kind of like the beginning of a party. It was very beautiful, captivating. But when I knew I was going to Changsha, I knew I was going there for a reason.
Mm.
And also for a bit of closure, I think. Changsha, all three cities that we went to are all vastly different from each other as well. It's almost like being in three different European countries. And it is a bit smaller than Shanghai. The food is very different, a lot spicier, a different fragrance to it. A lot of the people living in Changsha, because it's not as big of a, it still is a tourist destination, but not as big as, say, Shanghai or Beijing. Very few people spoke English when we were there. And I also kind of found, similar to Ireland, I suppose, in the three different areas, while I was learning Mandarin, they all spoke it very differently.
And did you feel, how did you get there? By train, was it?
Yeah, it was bullet train. And that was an experience in and of itself.
Yeah.
On the train, we were going through fields and lakes and mountains. It was gorgeous. I've never seen anything like it before. Things that you'd find on the back of postcards.
Did you arrive into the train station where you were found, or a different
one? No, we tried to, and we weren't able to get a train that went from Shanghai to Changsha. And I also think it would have been maybe a bit much on the very first day, having to kind of face that. We did go to the train station once we settled into the hotel and got food and things like that. And unfortunately, like, adopted Chinese girls is quite common in China. And when I was there, I remember I started crying in front of the train station, and a lot of the people that were, you know, waiting to get on their train, a lot of the locals that were around were looking at me, and it's almost like, even though nobody said anything to me, that they understood what was happening. And I still felt that support, even though no one touched me, no one said a word, but I could feel that kind of empathy in the atmosphere.
That's so powerful.
It was extremely powerful.
Because I think, you know, when I speak to people who live in London or big cities, they say, like, you could be lying on the ground and people would just step over you. But you felt a kind of connection with people when you were standing
completely
there.
Completely different energy. Yeah.
What did that feel like? Or what sort of energy were they giving off?
It felt quite comforting, actually, at the time.
Yeah.
To know that, like, it's a huge city, to know that you're not alone in a strange place that you've never been to with people you don't know. It was very reassuring.
It must have been tough for your mum and dad as well, just to see, to know you were going to be emotional, and for them to go there too.
It's as much their story as it is mine, yeah.
And what sort of things, I'd imagine your mum was very comforting, like, what sort of things would she say to you?
For a while, I reckon I must have stood there for about 15 minutes. And we went and got food afterwards, and we weren't really talking an awful lot. I think I was just in shock. And the first thing that both my parents said once we had sat down, we had ordered our food, was that they still loved me.
Oh, that's so lovely. What way did you feel when you were standing there?
It's a feeling I've never felt before. It's very hard to put into words. Just this kind of, this is my beginning. This is where I come from. It's bizarre, it's indescribable, but also empowering in a way. Yeah. To know that this is what I've come from, and everything that I've accomplished and everything that I've done since, and all the opportunities that have come my way. Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, I must be on a TV show or something, because this doesn't feel real.
And did you feel like you had this kind of deep connection with the city?
Yeah, so there's this statue in Changsha of Chairman Mao Zedong, who was a very famous kind of Chinese president, for lack of a better word. And he was from Changsha, and he grew up there and studied there. And there's this huge statue of him, and I have this photo at home of myself under the statue, facing the same way with the same facial expression as him. And we've the same nose, same jawline. I found that in the different cities, people had a certain look. I suppose the same way you would kind of know if someone was Irish or if they were French. And I did, it's something so strange, but growing up in Ireland, there wasn't a whole lot of people that looked like me. So going over to China and seeing, hey, I have the same nose as that guy over there, and that girl's hair kind of looks like mine. It was strange in a way, but also very comforting and welcoming.
Yeah, I totally understand what you mean by that. When you were in Changsha, do you feel like you were thinking about your birth parents more? Or
of course, wondering what they're doing now. If they could see me now, what would they say? But we'll never know. And that for me is definitely a turning point of when I started accepting and embracing my Chinese heritage a little bit more.
Do you feel, have you made peace with the fact that you'll never know? Or do you feel like someday you might know? Or is there a way for you to find out?
I think I have made peace with it, but I wouldn't say I'm overly religious or religious in the traditional sense, But I do believe in God, and I believe that things happen the way they're meant to. And if God needs me to meet my birth parents, it will happen. And if it doesn't, then that happened for a reason too.
I imagine that it took work to get there to that point.
Yeah, because it's not, being adopted isn't something that everyone can relate to. Mm. And I'm sure you probably found this with battling cancer, you know, how people can react to different traumatic events differently and how people can have a different perspective on it. And even though you might share the same experience as someone, you can have two completely different outlooks on it and two different reactions.
It's when I'm with, say, breast cancer survivors, I feel this connection. It's like it's unspoken, but it's this bond that you have through a shared experience.
Mutual understanding, nearly.
Yeah. Do you connect with other people your age who've been adopted?
I know a lot of people who are adopted, and it's not something that I ever said, oh, I need to find other people who are adopted. But in recent weeks, especially since the tweet happened, I would love to do more work, maybe volunteering in that kind of area. It's something I've been considering an awful lot more recently.
Wow. And that tweet now could kind of just put you in that direction almost, or bring that to the surface that, hey, this is something I want to do. And I just don't think things like that happen as a coincidence or
by chance. Yeah,
absolutely not. This is your path.
I actually wanted to be a doctor for a very long time. And then when I was in TY, I realized, hey, I actually don't like the sight of blood. I don't like anything like that. I would not be able to handle it.
And do you think about, say, you know, you love education, brains to burn. Do you think about your birth parents and what they might have done in their lives?
Sometimes, yeah. And especially when we went to Changsha and seeing that everyone kind of looked like me, I kind of started thinking, if my mom looked like me. Because, you know, you always hear of other people saying, oh, you're the spitting image of your mom. And obviously no one ever said that to me. But yeah, it is something I have thought about. Did I get my brains from them? Is it all hard work, nurture versus nature?
Yeah, God, it's because I have a stepdad, and, you know, obviously I am not biologically connected to him, but I get a lot of my personality from him, you know, so that I can see why you'd be thinking, where am I getting these brains from, you know? And tell us about leaving China. How long did you spend there in 2018?
We spent 3 weeks there.
Okay. And did you feel ready to come home at the end of that?
I did. I think it was just the right amount of time. I missed my friends. I missed my boyfriend. I missed having a chicken fillet roll and a cup of tea.
So there's no chicken fillet rolls and cups of Barry's tea over there?
No. No.
So yeah, tell us about the day you were kind of packing up to come home.
Another thing that I really loved about China was the shopping and the fashion. So I actually had to buy two more suitcases, much to my dad's dismay. So it was a lot of packing to do. I think I started the day before because my parents said, you need to get a head start or we're going to be late.
So going to the airport and coming home, did you feel like you had gotten that closure that you were looking for?
Absolutely, yeah. And in saying that, I would love to go back to China at some stage, or whether that's as a holiday or as a career, who knows? But I just know that I'm not finished with it yet.
I had a lady called Jenny Miller on my podcast back in season one, and she went to Sri Lanka with her husband. He was a rugby coach, and in her spare time, she volunteered at an orphanage, and she fell in love with a little girl, and they adopted her and brought her home to Ireland, and they have the most beautiful family. And they brought her to America because she needed surgery on her legs to help her to walk. So when you think about adoption and the world and how big it is and how many children need homes, like, what are your thoughts on that?
I've always thought that and I'm not speaking from experience because I don't have any kids, but I always thought that being a mother was almost like having a superpower. I really do admire women who have kids and everything that goes with it. And I would be so pro-adoption. I think, as you said, there's so many kids out there like myself that need a good home. And I know there's many couples or women struggling with fertility issues. I think it's an amazing experience. I think it's absolutely fabulous, and it's such a great thing to be able to do and care for someone else, whether that's your own biological child or not.
Do you think that you would ever consider adoption as you get older?
Definitely. I've always had it in the back of my head. The sky is the limit.
I love your attitude. I absolutely love it. Just in terms of your leg and, you know, getting that treatment that you needed, I'm sure you're very grateful for that.
As a baby, it was quite red and angry looking. But as I grew older now, you'd kind of struggle to look for it. And when you're 12, 13 years old, and the weight of the world is on your shoulders and you're concerned about how you look and how you appear to other people. In the past, I was talking to my parents about the idea of getting plastic surgery to get rid of the mark and have a smooth, spotless, clear leg. And I always thought about it, but never made any rough decisions. But at the moment, I'm glad that I never went ahead with that because it's such an important part of me. And if I had this smooth, perfect leg, it wouldn't be who I am. It also is proof of how far I've come. And I think any of those quote unquote imperfections tell a story about someone yeah. and about their personality and where they've come from, where they've been, all their experiences. And I think it's lovely and it's not something that I would change.
Wow, that is amazing. And when you look at it, does it remind you of your start in life?
And China, yeah.
Beautiful. What did you get from telling your story? And I don't mean get, but what did it do for you internally? Because I'm sure, I don't know how you slept that night when your tweet was going viral. I'm sure you'd so many thoughts running through your head. But what has this experience in the last 3 months taught you?
Firstly, well, all the time, I'm always grateful for everything I have. But do you know, it's good to kind of take a step back every now and again and really appreciate life. Because again, at the time I was messing, I was joking, I probably was drinking with friends, having fun, and you don't really realise how good you have things until it's gone. And I really wasn't expecting the response that it got. I think, and a lot of people in the comments were saying, you know, how it made them realise how grateful they are for their own lives and their own families and what brought them to where they are in life at the moment.
When you maybe think about people who are considering adoption, and I've spoken to people, and it's not an easy road to go down, just in terms of like what we spoke about, the paperwork and how difficult and hard of a process it is. But what do you say to people who are considering adoption?
I say go for it, run for it. It is quite a long process, but ultimately I think it is very rewarding.
You've had a beautiful life by the sounds of it. What do you say to maybe young people listening who've been adopted?
Well, everyone's story is different. I remember a conversation I had with another woman who is adopted, and I was very young when she said this to me, and she said, adopted children don't grow in their mammy's bellies, they grow in their mammy's hearts. And I thought that was so lovely, and I was too young to really understand what that meant, and my eyes are even watering thinking about that. I thought that was just such a lovely sentiment and saying, and it's something that I would always say to anyone who's considering adopting or who has been adopted, to know that you are loved, and everything that your parents did to have you in this world, what is that if not love?
Wow. Annalee, I'm so blown away by your story, the person you are, for giving me your time today. I know it's such a personal story, and I really am so grateful to you for coming on the Good Glow.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Lloyd's Pharmacy. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review. It really makes a difference. And you can find the Good Glow wellness program over on theGoodGlow.ie.